Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Fletch Matlack on finding spiritual nourishment in the remote wilderness.
My wife and my daughter and another friend, and we were canoeing on this beautiful Adirondack lake that was, it was probably close to midnight. The stars just splashed across the sky. The Milky Way was palpable. And the water that we were in was glass. And so you could see the stars above and they were reflected below. And it was just this beautiful, ethereal, glorious moment where God was just showing a little bit of himself in the stars, seen above and below. So I don't know, there's nothing like being out and seeing those things and experiencing the glory of God in nature.
Fletch Matlack next. New York pastor Fletch Matlack loves adventuring in wild outdoor places, and doing so increases his awe of God. Spencer Dahlke is with him to discuss his piece, Young Men, The Wild Places Are For You.
What prompted you to write the article?
I've spent a lot of years taking young men into the wilderness, and we're certainly in a moment culturally where I think young men are struggling and are looking for guidance and are looking to understand what it means to be a man of God, you know, and of course, particularly in the church. We're dealing with all of the distractions that come from a screen that are taking attention away, I think, from what God has designed us for. So writing this article was just coming from that kind of place, giving some guidance. And then also what I have seen over the past 20 plus years, God precisely targets the hearts of men in the wild. I just wanted to write about that because I think in this cultural moment we're in, it's so needed.
You make four observations about the outdoors and how they can like form a young man's soul. The first of which was that beauty leads to worship, in which you talk right about seeing the glory of God in creation. And for myself, at least, glory has always kind of been a squishy term that I've not been super clear about what that means. Can it be defined? And if so, would you care to enlighten us what it means?
Glory of God, I would say, is his attributes on display in some way that our senses or our mental capacity or heart capacity can intake. So when we are experiencing God in one way or another, we're experiencing some measure of his glory. And certainly the outdoors, I believe God has embedded his glory in everything. I just think it's so accessible outside the view of his glory. God's holiness, that's who he is innately. His holiness on display, whether it be through the gospel or through creation, that's his glory. You know, so we can perceive it and then revel in it, rejoice in it.
You have a quote that I really appreciated from C.S. Lewis about seeing creation is kind of like its own definition of what the glory of God means, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I love that about Lewis. I'm not looking at the quote right now, but he learned about God's glory through scripture, through church, through sort of the traditional places, but he didn't really have a name for it or a category for it until he was outside and beholding things. And my word, that is so true for me. Like, yeah, I can read these pages in this wonderful book called the Bible that talk about his glory, you know, the glory of the gospel, the glory of God's grace and so on. So for instance, I was just out with my wife and my daughter and another friend, and we were canoeing on this beautiful Adirondack lake that was, it was probably close to midnight. The stars just splashed across the sky. The Milky Way was palpable. And the water that we were in was glass. And so you could see the stars above and they were reflected below. And it was just this beautiful, ethereal, glorious moment where God was just showing a little bit of himself in the stars, seen above and below. So I don't know, there's nothing like being out and seeing those things and experiencing the glory of God in nature.
The word worship, I think, derives from worth-ship, isn't that right? So like ascribing worth to something, saying this is a worthy thing. What is it about the beauty and creation that resonates, I guess, in the heart of a man and prompts worship?
It's true for everybody, right? I don't care if you're a young man or an old man or middle-aged man like me or a woman of any age. God has imprinted his beauty. So it's his design. It's a reflection of his character Lewis also talks, and I think this is in The Weight of Glory, he talks about how when you experience creation, there's something still not consummate about it. You want to enter into it. You somehow want to become a part of it, or it to become a part of you, because you're seeing this manifest beauty in front of you, knowing that it points you to this greater being who made all of it, and that there's this experience with this greater being that creation itself doesn't provide, but it's the window into. Worship sort of transports you into that experience of consummating the glory seen in creation, because when we worship, it's just the full experience coming full circle. When young men have that experience, and perhaps for the first time, I think it's absolutely transcendent for them. And I literally have been standing by a riverbank or on a mountaintop and have watched as young men have that experience and just have begun singing right out of nowhere. I was with a man just this past spring, and he's in his early 20s, who just got really emotional as he experienced this outdoor world for the first time and saw God's imprint on it, began to worship, and then there was this communion that was just so precious.
It also kind of reminded me, we live in a world in which we like to try to explain everything. It can strip the wonder of the experience when you just understand everything and how it works. It's like the ATM machine when kids are like, how does it work? How does it spit out money? Is there a man in there that's, you know? So How can we foster that wonder in our hearts to see small things, big things, as the remarkable things that they are?
I do believe that it takes a certain presentness. In that article, I also talk about simplicity. The busyness of our life and screens and schedules and all of that fills our life with so much stuff that we don't need. I'm not saying it's all bad, of course. It's just a lot. And so simplicity, I think, is really captured when we begin to observe or embrace the presentness that we are in. Just being outside and taking a deep breath. What do you smell when you do that? And I know maybe that sounds silly, but here in upstate New York, we're just starting to catch the first sense of that crisp fall air. And so just to like take a moment and smell it, that is great. And then I'm always like looking for when the first colors on these leaves are going to start to turn. It's being present like that. It's observing what's around you. It's being intentional about watching what God has put there. And, you know, I live very close to the country, into wild places, to woods and all of that, but used to live in a small town city, Pennsylvania, which is maybe not the most wilderness friendly, a lot of farm fields, but even just there, sitting and watching as the mist lifts off of a cornfield and you see the birds flit through it, that kind of beauty is enrapturing, and it takes some intentionality to see it. Like, put the phone down, put the screen down, and just watch what God has placed there, knowing, of course, it comes from Him. So when we couple that with, I think, our regular rhythms of abiding in Christ through prayer, through word, it really makes for a beautiful sort of ongoing symphony of the reality of God surrounding us all of the time.
It has seemed like a good thing that we as human beings have tried to explain and find God in the inner workings of how His creation works, unfolding and revealing these mysteries. I was also just struck by Proverbs 25:2, in which it says, the glory of God is to conceal things. The glory of kings is to search those things out. So I guess my question to you, do you think there's a place for mystery in God's created order? In other words, like, is it a bad thing that we'd want to know everything?
Well, it's certainly not a bad thing that we want to know everything, but I do think it would be futility if we think that we can. And being that, like, you know, I'm just some regular guy. I'm no scientist. I'm no quantum physicist or anything. My capacity to intake all of that stuff is incredibly limited. And so I'm quite happy not trying to find out what's behind the curtain, so to speak. I want to take God at His word, and I certainly understand that the things that I'm seeing have come from Him one way or another, right? They've come from Him. I don't know if you're a married man, but there's that day you're at the altar and your bride is veiled before you. That veiling, there's a beauty in that. It is enrapturing. It's enticing. It makes you want to pursue and go deeper. And I think God has done that in creation as well. He has veiled himself in a variety of ways. And it's not always the ways that our culture would frame it. How do these properties hold together in such a way that I can actually see anything? Because, right, the space between atoms means I shouldn't actually be able to see anything. And yet I can. And it's this mystery that science has yet to figure out how all of that works, right? So I'm not too interested in trying to discover myself. But then also there is hiddenness. Just as you enter into the wilderness, you don't know what's around the next river bend. You don't know what's over the next mountain. You don't know what's going to happen to you as you pass through that wilderness. And so you're like uncovering as you go more of God's creation and more of who he created you to be. And then as a result, who God is and how he sustains through all of that. So there is this unfolding that happens as we are moving through wild places. And I think that can be applied more broadly in life too, but there's a particular potency to it in wild places because everything else is stripped away. Again, back to the idea of simplicity. I have found it to be more acute, more visceral than what we could call normal life.
Speaking of simplicity, there is a lot that can be said about like beauty and worship. But you talk also about simplicity leading to prayerfulness. I was curious if you would lay that out for us. How is that?
So that presentness that I was talking about and observing the things around you, that's a very simple sort of experience. You know, it's not filled up with all this other stuff. You're just observing what's right there. Just thinking of an example, I was out on the trail not that long ago walking by this river, and it just happened to be a really beautiful scene. And I just was like, Lord, thank you for this. This is amazing. I know that if I was somewhere else, I wouldn't have this experience. And this beaver happens to be coming by me at this very moment, Lord, because I know you have done that. And so it just kind of goes into this like conversational gratitude where all of these beautiful things that you're seeing, and this mixes with the worship, right? You just begin lifting it up in prayers of gratitude, of thanksgiving. But then also, I have worked to be intentional in supplication type praying as I'm out there. I like to trail run. I was on this run a little while ago and knew that that run would take me for about an hour. And so that entire time, I'm just praying the Lord's Prayer, asking the Lord to do all of these things for my friends, for my church, for myself, for my family, as I'm out there in the wild. And because what is happening around me is very simple, just me in the woods and the trail, and I'm moving, I don't have to think about all of this other stuff. I can be very focused in lifting up my prayers to God. And I know 100%, at least for me, if I were at home and there was a phone nearby or someone in my family nearby, that prayer time would have been interrupted. So it's like finding that simple solitude and just being really intentional with it. So there's this like unintentional, incidental prayerfulness that comes from beautiful places. And then there's this intentional thing that I think is a being out in the wild is a wonderful place to practice that.
So what do we mean by simplicity then? Because there's a lot of life and there's a lot happening and there's a lot of complexity in creation.
Well, again, I think you're removing a lot of busyness from life. We are plagued by busyness. We can get a lot done. We value efficiency and we're hard workers, and that's an awesome thing. But I think it takes away from, or it can take away from, stripped down simplicity. So when we remove screens and schedules and all of that, or we build into our schedule a block of time to not be doing anything else except enjoying what's out there and experiencing the God who made it, we're sort of building simplicity into it. I was at a lake. I went out with the intention of just spending time in prayer. And I sat at this lakeside for about 4 hours on this one beautiful day, beautiful summer day. And, you know, there are, I'm hearing frogs. I'm seeing little chipmunks scamper around. There are birds flitting about, like the black-capped chickadee chirping in the trees right above me. Super playful, very friendly, going bonkers. And there are dragonflies running these psyop missions, destroying all the other bugs above the lake. I love it. I love watching it all. In all of that, like the busyness of nature, so to speak, you find yourself observing it and there's a peace to it. I don't know. Honestly, Spencer, that one's hard to describe, but there's a peacefulness to it. And also, I do think it leads to a gratitude of heart. Like, God, you designed all of this stuff and it's so beautiful. I get to experience it. Nobody is out here anywhere near me. I'm like totally alone in this place. And this experience that I'm having is completely unique. A gift from you, Father. It's visceral. It's beautiful.
Have you ever read much Wendell Berry at all?
That's funny. He is my best friend's poet, his favorite poet. I've read a bit of Wendell Berry because of my good friend, but he would be frowning right now because I know I haven't read it like he would want me to, and perhaps I should.
Well, I mean, he writes, well, obviously, you know, he's kind of a prolific writer, you know, yes. Not a fan of technologies, you know, right. Computers and industrialization. Mm-hmm. You were talking about like the busyness of creation, and there's something about it that's different than the busyness of urban life. I mean, one of Wendell Berry's ideas that seems particularly poignant here is that man is meant to be connected to the land. Yeah. I'm curious if you think that there's something to that, that God has built into our hearts.
Maybe God created Adam and Eve to rule the garden and not urbanization. Yeah, I definitely think there's something to that. He created us for Eden, and though Eden was lost, it's returning. You look at the end of Revelation, and that's Eden returned and restored, and also like filling the whole earth, the new heavens and the new earth. And so that's what we're created for ruling and governing nature. And yeah, there's probably a civilizing effect in all of that, which is a good thing. But I also think our fallenness has corrupted what it should be. So a return to nature is in very many ways a return to a grasping at returning to Eden, in a sense. I do think that there's something to that. There's a lot to do when you're in nature. And if you're sitting still, it's either because all of your other needs have taken care of, or you've been incapacitated and you're in danger. You know, because when you're out there, let's just say backpacking or whatever, when you make camp, you're collecting firewood, you're purifying water, you're, you know, making your food, you're setting things up, all of that stuff. Very little time is just actually sitting doing nothing. So it's busyness in your activity. There's the busyness of everything happening around you with creation. But because it's closer to, I think, what God created us for, certainly more so than maybe the concrete landscape in New York City, not terribly far away from where I am, because it's more in tune with the purposes of Eden, I think that for us, there's something soul satisfying in it. And let me also say this, not everybody resonates with it, and that's okay. I think that's completely fine. But there are some who do. And again, particularly, I think young men do. There's like a manliness to it. There's something that just that calls a man up. Like, I want to go tackle this challenge. I want to go be a part of it. I want to know I have what it takes. And then to discover that you do, even if you're a bit beat up afterwards, young men really resonate with that.
A lot of these points that you've been talking about, the last two that you were talking about were adversity leading to fortitude, wild experiences leading to brotherhood. A lot of these experiences have been accurate descriptions of the experiences that my lady friends have also experienced. Why did you address these specifically to young men?
And also, I have four daughters, so I want all of my daughters to experience these things, and I take them out and they love it. And it's amazing the bond that it has between all of us and their friends that are girls they go out with. So it's totally accessible to anybody. But to answer your question, I will say again, I think that there is something especially potent for young men in these things. We're all made for adversity as human beings. Men, maybe more particularly, are designed to conquer, to conquer and overcome and to work through really difficult things for an outcome that might even be kind of fuzzy. Now, this might be a little particular, but when I take my girls out, we have a difficult objective, and we go and do that, and we have a great time, and there's suffering involved. When I've been out with other women, same thing. When I take certain young men out who I know what they can handle to a degree, we will go after things way more difficult and way more painful and things that take longer. To see men like helping each other through that, serving one another, there's this one experience I had when I was back in college, and I had a group of 12 guys out on a really difficult trail. It was way too many guys. I was learning as well. I should not have had that many guys out. We did this ridgeline above the trees, and the weather was terrible. It was late spring. It was snow, sleet, ice, and rain all at once. So, like, you can't stay dry, and you're freezing. Sure, women could have been up there, too. And I don't doubt it would have been a meaningful experience. But these men absolutely loved, hated it at the same time, and it was amazing. I watched one of my friends, super gusty winds. It's in the Presidential Mountains in New Hampshire, if you're familiar, but I watched this wind blow my friend off of his feet and sit him down on his butt. And then he crawls over and like gets his back against this rock for some break in the wind. And he's just kind of sitting there. My other buddy comes over to him and he whispers in his ear, "Josh, if you sit here, you're going to die." Now, maybe it was a little melodramatic, but the point was real. Like, you can't sit down and rest now. We have to keep moving. If we don't, we're all in trouble. So my, you know, that guy got right up and he starts moving. And, you know, so many other things happened on that trip that were really painful and difficult. I watched somebody almost just out of weariness fall down a bit of an embankment, almost hit his head severely on some rocks. But by the grace of God, that didn't happen. So I say that because it took fortitude. It built fortitude. We loved and hated it at the same time. Goodness, probably 20 years later, anytime I see somebody who was on that trip, without fail, it comes up and we'll talk about how amazing that little trip was. It had definitely formed a brotherhood between us. And it's like a bond. It's perhaps akin to like the bond that soldiers would find in a foxhole, that sailors would find on their ship that went through the storms, right? You cannot in any way articulate that experience to somebody else and they get it, but you have to walk through it together. And once you have, there's this clicking between the two of you that you will always share. There's a certain need in the heart of a man that needs to share that with other men, to suffer together, to forge bonds together like that. Even in ministry for me, Spencer, I want a man to be shoulder to shoulder with, like soldiers, like mountaineers. Like, we are taking on this battle together and bearing this weight together, and we've got each other's back. I want that. I have a couple men who are like that for me, and it's amazing when you find that as a man. And we isolate ourselves and think we need to be stronger than is sensible and various other things like that. So when you're in the wilderness together, or when you're facing that adversity together, you're seeing things about each other that does not get revealed in other sectors of life. So you learn about each other in a profound way, and yourself, and then you have that shared experience and realize, like, I know I can go through the fire with this guy. I want to be in the trenches with him, right?
A lot of young men live in urban areas. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like people tend to gravitate from the small towns, from the wild areas to the cities.
Where I am in the Northeast, being not far from Boston or New York City, like, these wild places are accessible somewhat by both of those metropolitan areas. And I'm always seeing people out there from the city. And honestly, you know exactly when you see them, but they're still out there. And I think that's wonderful. You really, any place in the U.S. has wild places that are accessible. It just takes intentionality. Like, I used to live in Southeast Pennsylvania, sort of on the suburban outskirts of Philadelphia, and would be driving anywhere from 7 to 12 hours to go reach these places before I moved to upstate New York. And it was formative, worth it. One of the best things that happened to me as a young man. My dad introduced me to it. So if we're intentional, I don't care where you live, you can get into it.
How do you think culture would change if more young men spent time wondering at God's creation and spending time in it, in these wild places?
Big question, perhaps, but a relatively simple answer. I think it would produce stronger men. It teaches adversity, fortitude. It teaches, like, you have to be intentional and hardworking, and you have to serve the people that are around you when you're out in such a place. You have to do these things. Otherwise, you're either going to bring the whole team down that you're with, or you're going to have a miserable time. And you might have a miserable time because of your conditions, but I mean, like, morale will likely tank if you're not doing those things, if you're not serving and taking initiative and working hard and enduring. So being in wild places, like, and I mean, like, truly a wild place here where you're far from everything and it takes effort to get to, it teaches you strength. And so I think our men might be a little bit stronger because know, being behind a screen all day, having a sedentary life, having people provide all of your needs, and you have to do very little, which I think is the culture in which we live, teaches us to be soft and expect other people to meet our needs. So being out there and having to, you know, to be self-sustaining and to carry the team that's with you, and everybody's carrying each other, that's what creates or helps to create stronger men, right? We can get those experiences in society, but it's like a stripped down and expedited version when you're out there in the wild. And it happens fast because it needs to. And if you don't do those things, you're in trouble or your team's in trouble.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, New York pastor Fletch Matlack, talking about his article, Young Men, The Wild Places Are For You. You can read it at thegospelcoalition.org. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Brad Hambrick on recovering from marital infidelity.
And if somebody's going, I shouldn't have to do that, then that gives you a sense that they're not wanting to participate in a marriage where restoration would be a blessing.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.